Hello and welcome everybody to the Nordic stage. Hafnium, who's a university student who's studying cyber technology, is going to talk about how to found an internet exchange. He founded LabX from his hackerspace Labitat in Copenhagen. Welcome with me, Hafnium.
Thank you. I would like to tell you about how we created an internet exchange in my local hackerspace. So first, why I'm making this talk. Well, as a newcomer to the networking world, network routing and similar, I found it really difficult to find good information on IXP operations. I could read some things from some network operator meetups and some of the commercial internet exchanges, but that was not. It was really, really high level, so everything was a bit difficult to understand on what is it exactly. And also, when you need to get an AS number and other IP resources delegated, there is some administration, and it differs from region to region. Our region in Europe and is ripe, and there is some policies in this that they have. So what is the Labitat Internet Exchange? Well, it is a community-run internet exchange in Labitat, in our nice little hackerspace in Copenhagen. We use it as a place to learn network routing. It is a very difficult topic to get started in. There are some projects that can help you, like DN42. But if you want to do routing where you talk with the sort of real world and not via VPNs, well, then you need to pay a lot of money to get into a data center or find some project where it is available for you, also closely nearby, that you can actually start doing network routing and bring a small server, perhaps. So yes, you can learn some BGP. This is where I learned my BGP, at least, in our hackerspace. You can play with our route server. It has its own nice AS number. You can get started in getting IP resources like AS numbers and IP addresses. You can play with BGP security. This is again one of the things where it's really difficult to actually get a grasp on unless you start playing with it. There are some really nice talks around the world about RPKI and filtering strategies. But if you also want to actually try it, it is kind of difficult to get outside your own home lab. And it's also very soon we will change it to 9K MTU. The default in the world is 1500 MTU, and that is an expert of C draft for how to change it. As soon as I get all the way through that and I notify our members, I will change. We will also get that. It has a few advantages compared to 1500. So, well, what does your hackerspace need to have an internet exchange? You need a friendly uplink. Maybe you have multiple. That would be very cool. That's because if they do not necessarily like you, it's very hard to update your policies. Their own policies. Allows your IX clients to be announced to the world. So having a member that works in in your uplink really helps, but maybe be good friends and give them a beer, some people you know. You also need, of course, some server housing. You need a rack. We have used rack, that they are available multiple places. We also have a used layer 2 switch. That's the one marked with my badly drawing. And you need at least 3 PN clients. This is the magic number of getting anything done when you talk with an IX, about an IX. Bribe requires it, PNDB requires it, and the IXP database requires you to even be registered or considered having an entry in each of their databases. Of course, this is also a hackerspace, so you need to have some. You need to have more than one person, because when that person stops coming to the hackerspace, it will die. And that's a usual thing with community-run projects. So of course, you need to have some documentation and have some people who like to run this. So what is an internet exchange? The very simple version is that it's a VLAN on a layer 2 switch. And then we have a few of connector networks, and that is operators with their own AS number and prefixes. So this was the difficult part. If you don't know much about networking, this was a bit of a large step to have. But if you know what I talked about, this is what you needed. All these five slides. But let me explain the internet a bit, because it took me years to understand the internet, and I'm still learning a lot. So to newcomers, let's explain some things. Well, how do you do internet routing? I assume you know some networking, like IP addresses, at least. But you get your IP prefix allocated, you find the host facility, you install your machine, and then you set up your external BGP routing daemon. That can come in proprietary and open source solutions. You can find, you will need to find some peers to connect with and peer with them, and we'll find a transit that allows you to connect to the rest of the internet, because you're if you're located in Copenhagen, how do you have a connection to Berlin, for example? You need a direct fiber to some place. So some companies like do this as their business, and yes, profit, I guess. So let's set a scenario. Well, you are a eyeball ISP in Copenhagen. Well, an eyeball ISP is you have customers with eyeballs that consume content. That could be watching their favorite movies, for example. And well, you need to get content from the content providers, the people having the movies. And you need some IP addresses for customers and servers to be able to reach from the internet. And you also need, of course, some server housing and some fibers around, but I won't go into that. This is I think the nicest image I found yet. This is an example of networking of some peers and transit providers. Don't bother with the names of them, but. You can have, for example, AS number 1 in the total left side, and they have some prefixes, and they can be announced up to their uplink via the next one in the line, which then in turn announce it further. This is called a transit, because you don't have a direct connection to everybody else. But it also goes the same way with. Now the network provider can then connect to to everybody else, or get traffic from everybody else. So a autonomous system, that was a thing called AS1, AS2, AS3 here. Well, an autonomous system is a Well, the best description I found yet was in a internet standard, where it says a connected group of one or more IP prefixes worn by one or more network operators, which has a single and clearly defined routing policy. I'll get a bit more into the details of that, but one or more network operators, and you have some prefixes, and yeah. So an autonomous system is identified by a unique 16 or 32 ASN, a autonomous system number, also called ASN. And yes, we use it to say, I'm AS 2111 53, that's my personal AS. But if you look that up, you can find out what my routing policies are, and also who should, what addresses do I have. So, well, a routing policy, this is the simplified version, is that we have some objects called Internet Routing Registry objects. We have them in our local regional Internet Registry database, like RIPE in our case, at least in Copenhagen. And well, these could, for example, say that these IP prefixes should be destined to me, and I will accept prefixes destined to and from my business customers, AS something something and AX something something else. Pretty much it. That's other details you can go into, but very simplified. That you say I would like to, I accept that the people or the organizations behind me can be announced through me. Also, I have included when I found a lot of good reading material, I've included in the bottom. Then you can find my slides on the program page. So we also have peering and transit, as I mentioned. So peering is that we agree that we only send traffic distant to each other. So you have prefixes here, I have prefixes here, and you have some content and I want some content. So you can we have a direct connection to each other and we peer. This is most usually free, but there is a small asterisk that, of course, it costs some things to pull a fiber in a data center. Many data centers take a monthly fee for having a cross connect, as we call it. And of course, you also need to buy your own optics and things like that. So we also have transit. Well, this is the people who like to transport traffic from you to other networks, and also the other way. But it costs something per megabyte. Megabit, I wrote. And of course, we would like to avoid this as much as we can. But again, we can't be connected to every network in the world. So this creates a little of a dilemma on where should we actually connect? Who should we peer with? Does it really make sense to connect with this small provider while they really want to? Do we actually want to pay for our part of it? We have the internet exchange where I will get back to that question in a small second. So the internet exchange is that we would like to keep local traffic local. This is the main reason. because when you have transit providers, you sometimes get the issue of having the trombone effect. I included an image here where it says this is a map of United States, some of it, and we have three cities here. We have Los Angeles, San Francisco, and New York. Well, the traffic goes from Los Angeles to San Francisco. I hope you can see the arrows also, but it does not go directly. It goes all the way to some good amount of kilometers to San Francisco. This creates latency. This isn't just unnecessary, and it may be just because your transit provider doesn't have a direct connection between these two cities, or maybe they made a routing mistake. That happens. So we get lower latency if we are directly connected to each other. Well, an internet exchange also makes it more easy to connect to other networks. So, yeah, I always said the recurring cost of data centers. Well, the simplified topology of an internet exchange looks kinda like this. So we have this mystery meet me room, as we call it, and we have some providers, and there's also, if there's a cloud service down here, that would be probably a content provider. We all have one connection in to our meet me room, instead of having connections to each other all the way. Yeah, this is mostly how it looks. There's some other things about internet exchanges. So I would like to explain a bit on some of the characteristics. So first, we can have our bilateral peering. It's called also many-to-many, where I connect to each and everybody I would like to peer with. But instead, I go to multilateral, I have one connection in to a route server, and that makes sure I can connect to the other ones, as everybody else does this. So we have like this central point. You can of course have load balancing and similar things, so it's not a single point of failure. But the very simple version of this is that you have one machine in here. A route server is for aggregating our control plane traffic. So we don't send our traffic over the route server itself, but we make sure like the routes can be distributed by the route server. So the advantages of this is that now we have lower maintenance. We don't need to necessarily have a lot of entries with each and every peering client. We can connect immediately to newcomers. So if we have this small network that would like to connect with me and I don't necessarily want to pay the cost, we can directly connect to each other, connect immediately with each other as soon as they jump on the route server, given that I'm also present. And then traffic just flows, so we don't have to go through the transit. Well, we can also have some debugging tools and actually see more of what is going on. So, yeah, the image shows how you can do it, or how, overview of how it happens. Well, our route server looks like this. Yes, it's a very small machine. It's also a very small hackerspace. So it's like a thin client. It uses 6 watts of power. And we chose this because we had it in our hands already. It is not that powerful. It can run Debian. So yeah, it's fine, I guess. We use the config parser called a route server to, configure our route server. And this is where we keep the list of our clients, and then we generate the config that Bert, our internet routing daemon, uses. And Bert is the program actually getting the routes in and distributing routes to our peers, as well as clients can also use Bert. It's just a general purpose routing daemon. It's totally fine, but you can use it as a route server, but you can also use it as a client, and I use it as a client as well. Server hosting, for our case, we have our project called Labicolo. It's our co-location facility. It is intended for small embedded devices such as Raspberry Pis and APU2s. this is due to power restrictions, and we would like to keep it low, keep the cost low, as well as we don't. This is hobby projects. We don't necessarily need beefy servers, and they're also readily available and not that expensive to have. Yeah, again, this is the same picture I used, but this is our rack, and it looks awful. But we have this Cisco SG300. We use it because it was already there. Again, it's free. It can also do MAC port filtering. That's one of the requirements of, it wasn't of our peering requirements. So this is to avoid loops in the routing. You can definitely make it more pretty than we have. You can probably also clean it up a bit more. So So our peering policy. Well, every internet exchange has a peering policy. It's just like you as a network provider. You also have some policy that you say, I only want the traffic that you actually mean should go to me. I don't want my neighbor's traffic. Necessarily, or I do want most neighbors' traffic, but you have to pay. So, this is based on the local internet exchange peering policy, it looks very much like it. We allow the infinite Ethernet frames, IP4, IP6, and up. That's the usual suspects. Then we do not like proxy ARP and OSPF and other kinds of these. We only want to know BGP stuff. We do not want we want routing, and we want data traffic. We don't want a lot of let's for example say TCP, but we also don't. We only allow one kind of routing protocol, BGP. You could use other ones, but the internet in general uses BGP, so it makes things much more easy. The MAC address filtering, we also do not like that. If you connect via VPN, we need like the full MTU. You have to be physically present. This is not a virtual internet exchange. These also exist to play around with network routing. They're fine. I have nothing against them. But for our case, we wanted to have machines physically located. Virtual internet exchanges have the issue of now you are depending on transits to somewhere, and that transit can take a long time. Still a nice place to learn if you are interested. So an internet exchange client can also have their own policies. Well, here's very high overview of how they are listed. Some categories. Well, open is that we just like peering with everybody. This is when you hop on to the route server. We have the selective, where talk with us first, and we are usually open to this. We may have our own internal protocols that denies us this, and this is where you do direct peering connections and set up a separate entry for each and every one. So you can also have restricted that this could for example be a transit or a very large network where they have some security policies maybe or similar that restricts them. That means that you have to contact them, and maybe you need to be a large enough entity to be considered. I have seen this issue personally with some large providers not necessarily wanting to peer, even though a network provider did want to peer. It didn't make sense to buy transit. So, well, how do we get internet resources allocated? I have this image of a cake, I call it. IANA owns all the internet addresses in the world. You don't necessarily own the ones, you just get them allocated. Well, then we also have our regional internet registry. There are 5 of these in the world, spread out through our world. And this is RIPE in our case again. Then we have the local internet registry. This is, from what I could understand, a RIPE-specific thing. So as an end user, this is you. You don't talk directly with RIPE, but your local internet registry talks with RIPE for you. If you, however, want to be part, but want to be a member of the RIPE NCC, it is a member of an organization. You can pay the fee, but for a hobby project, it doesn't make sense. It is for network operators or people who like to pay some money every year. It's not cheap, but it's also not that expensive. So as a network operator, that could be a Arbol ISP again, or a content provider. Well, you want your addresses to be globally routable. This is where I say, I have this content and you have your customers who want this content. Well, somehow the traffic should go through the internet, and I should also be able to send traffic to you, and then you can handle it from there. So when everything is requested to me, I need an IP address and as a source IP address to send it back to. And this is where the routing takes over. So if you have an IXP, that is, well, you actually don't necessarily need to have globally routed IP addresses. The reason you don't necessarily need it is that you just need to have a unique identifier for your internet exchange members for their own routers, and you do not want it to be mixed up with anybody else in the world. This is why you request some IP addresses. It's not for hosting servers. So I didn't explain the cake. So IANA has all the addresses. Well, RIPE gets a little piece of the cake, and then your local internet registry gets a little piece of that cake, and then you get a tiny little piece of the local internet registry cake piece. That's a lot of addresses in the world, so this is only illustrative, it's fine. It's like you can use a /24 for a lot of things, and you use a /48 prefix for a lot of things. So we also have the RIPE database. The object you need to create is an organization object. If you already have one for your hackerspace, this is one thing I did wrong, was that we Labsat also already has an organization, since we do some BGP routing and announce our members. So if you already has that, you should just use your existing org object. But if you don't have, well, you should create an org object. You also have need maintainers. This is a list of people that are that get access to change your routing policy, and then a person is just a person. So you also need it's optional, but a normal network operator needs AES sets, and this is where actually your routing policy lies. So you don't actually need it for an internet exchange, but it's recommended if someone filters for these kind of things. This is an AES set is where we look into are you allowed to announce XYZ prefix. XYZ, AS number, not prefix. That's called a route object if you want to tie a prefix and an AS number together. So I also things like this, I couldn't find any of this. It was just a thing I learned, really, was of course, well, you need to give the give the name of your internet exchange. And you also do, like David asked, do you want a route server when you as soon as you say you want an internet exchange? Yeah, hopefully they will. And then you say yes, but then you also need to have some there's also some requirements. For route server, yes, you need an AS number. Your peers need to directly connect to them, connect to the route server. And this cannot be a private reserved one of the special purpose AS numbers. One thing is that you should request a 16-bit AS number. They are available if you ask directly for them and have a good reason for them. We are running out, so by default you will be assigned a 32-bit AS number. It does not matter in most cases if you just take your Linux machine and put it up. However, if someone brings a really old machine, well, you do want a 16-bit AS number. And this, they were just not set up for 32-bit, so it won't work. A bonus is that a Danish number plate actually also fits on a 16-bit AS number. So I have really been considering buying one and put it up on our rack. Stupid things. And yes, then you will also be asked, do you need prefixes? And then you say, yes, please. So RIPE, do not give IPv4 addresses out to globally routed. And anymore, there's a long, long, long waiting list. We have been exhausted the IPv4 space for a long time. And which is why you say, yes, this is not to be routed. This is specifically to be announced within our peering lane. This is the actual message I was sent, and then I said yes. So if you just give these pointers already, and then you're pretty good to go. Also, what size do you want addresses? And there's also a bit more. You have to confirm that your hosting facility actually has, or your colo facility actually has connectivity. I guess it makes sense. I just didn't think of that, so I had to scramble ask three people on where is this? And a few days later, I could get hold of it. So a lot of delays you can actually avoid to get hold of your contract at first, so you have a really ready. Again, the magic number was three customers. So if you have more than that, you're good. But if you have less, then you need one more because if you just have two people, you can just peer with each other. It doesn't make sense to set up all these and do all the administration. And they don't need to be connected directly at that time you set it up, but they need to agree and say, yes, I will definitely join as soon as I can. You also need to give the postal address and an address apparently that is able to receive mail, and then a contact person and their organization and a phone number. I was just casually writing emails, so I didn't really think of these, but they're pretty good pointers. How do you find a local internet registry? You ask your local network wizard. I have a few, not that many, but they know the magic of the internet. This is also where I got pointed to the free transit project when I got my own AS number. So it's a nice project. From Open Factory, that there's some really nice people behind it. There's also people behind it that is on this camp, and I hear there will also be an internet exchange by some of them run on the camp soon. Hopefully. So yes, I have a bias that I have. I personally know some of them. But if you want to find a ripe local internet registry service, well, you hop into your search engine and you search for that term. And some people are happily taking your money to facilitate this. It doesn't really cost that much to get started. It, for me, it was 25 euros personally. It's fine. If it's another project, well, then you need to. If it's a commercial actor, then you probably need to have to pay a bit more. Well, similar projects are all the community-run internet exchanges in the world that are commercial actors, many, but actually a lot of the internet exchanges are just some networking people meeting over a beer and say, yes, we need this, and they made this. So that's also some hosting facilities, Coloclu in Amsterdam, that's Casebase, CommunityRack. Then we also have bgp.whatthefuck in Warsaw Hackerspace, and I recently learned in Berlin is also exists, well, also can provide some BGP things. This is not internet exchanges, but these are places that do network routing. And may also have some people that can point in the right directions. I have probably missed a lot of nice projects, but this is the ones I found. I would like to say thank you to my collaborators. So this was actually a school project. Well, I managed to get ECTS points for it anyway. So Olivia and Daniel have created this together. And then we also have Yowei from Street Transit Projects, who really helped with all the ripe things, it was a whole new land for me. And then we also have Asbjorn, my local network wizard, for sharing a lot of lot of knowledge and a lot of pointers. Here are some good resources I found. Well, PingDB and BGP tools, I use them every day, almost every day. And then I will encourage you to go to your local network operator meetup. Like in Denmark, it's called DKNOC, and in Germany, it's called DENOC. Lots of nice people. You can get lots of nice. You can meet a lot of nice people, and usually, if you say I'll buy you a beer, then they will explain the whole thing to you on whatever subject you want. We also have that's also the RIPE Academy. This really helped me in understanding IPv6 and BGP security. They have they're actually pretty nice. You can also get a certificate if you want. That costs some money though, but you can take the courses for free. So that's a bit more. We have the Network Startup Research Center. That's also helped me. We have NLNOC with their ping BGP filter guide and NLNOC ring for search. How does the internet reach you? And then we have Eurex with their B-cups and their wish list on what to buy, and the $1,000 internet exchange presentation on how shitty hardware can you buy. It turns out we can buy really shitty hardware, from my experience. So if you want to find us, well, we actually have a self-organization called BGP Enable Hackerspaces at Chill 4 here at 17 today. Well, you can also meet me at Bornhack Village and also at Bornhack next year. Or you can meet us in Labitat. We were very gladly talk to you, just to come by. And we also have a website and the internet. We have a PingDB entry, of course, and if you want to write an email, throw it at me. If someone is interested in sponsoring this, I paid everything out of my own money. It was doable, but I'm a student, so money is limited. And we're very much like stickers. That is a huge shortage. And perhaps a second uplink on hardware. So the next thing we want to look at is Well, I should definitely set look at getting up a looking glass, so we can actually see how so participant can see how it works. How their routing happens. It's a small internet exchange, so routing. So ARP is not that large right now, and it's not a problem right now, but it can become a problem. There's a lot of ARP broadcasts when you have internet exchanges. We need more documentation, and we also need. I would like very, very much like to set up a PKI relay. I've set up personally, but not at the IX. We have already filters in of our own uplink, so it's not that much a problem. So, thank you for listening. This was my talk. And hopefully, there is a few questions.
Exactly. We have some time for Q&A. So if there are any questions, please put your hands up, and then I'm going to repeat them for the audience online. Yes?
Just a second.
Thank you so much.
Even better.
The peers you're peering with, are they located in the same building? Or are they having a fiber directly to you, or a wavelength on a fiber, or how do you connect to your peers physically?
Well, let me spool up a tiny bit. Sorry, the accent not there. If you look up in the imaginary north of the image, that is all the machines. They're all connected by, they're physically present. So everybody has a APU2 or Raspberry Pi or small machines that are physically present. Yes.
So your peers are only in the same building.
Yes. Okay.
So you're not peering with other networks.
No, that would be very nice, but it's also a small project. So
next question.
Okay. Do you know of any DIY internet access providers or hosting providers in Denmark that you could maybe peer with or connect with?
Network providers? Well, most are actually happy to peer with you, given that you are present at a place they are present. So that is the issue. So if you go to one of the larger data centers in Denmark, most definitely yes. Many have an open peering policy, and you can just go right ahead. It requires a bit of money to get into a data center, though.
So that's why sponsoring is so important, am I right?
Yes, you need some sponsoring.
Any other questions? We have time for one more, if there are any. If not, you can probably find him in the Bornhag village, and you can ask him some more, especially if it's like private questions, because you want to do the same project. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Big applause.